Talk to us now and go to the TNT Radio Interactive live chat room at tntradio.live. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT. This is McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT Radio.
Well, welcome everybody. Happy Sunday. We've got a fantastic show. This is David McBride, Robert Brennan. The doctor, Robert Brennan, is out there somewhere, and we have a very special guest. I'm going to use a little bit of a melodrama to tease it out. He's Australia's perhaps most dangerous man. You might think, who would that be? Who would it be, our special guest, who's Australia's most dangerous man? Is he from the Comancheros? Is he a bandito? Is he someone that used to work for the government and is knows all the codes to our special nuclear facilities? You know, he's someone who's so dangerous, you can actually get arrested for even talking to him. And pretty intriguing, says a lot about where we are. Some of you might have guessed, he is a guy called Troy Stoltz, and he's so dangerous. The thing he did was actually doing his job. That's what happens in Australia today. Like a lot of people, like Sharon Kelsey, who we've heard for, like Jeff Morris, who we've heard for, like Peter Fox, they all have something in common, and myself would be included in that list. They did their jobs. We did our jobs, and that can actually be surprisingly annoying for some people. Now, Troy, briefly, for those of you who have never heard of him, he used to be a compliance officer. His job was to make sure that there wasn't money laundering or to do the basic things to stop egregious money laundering and terrorism finance. So pretty good stuff that actually meant to keep us safe, make it more difficult for criminals, make it more difficult for terrorists to actually use the gambling industry for their own benefit. So he did his job, and in some ways I think, Troy, it can be the making of you. Anyway, Troy, maybe you can give us a little bit of an introduction, a potted history of your the last 5 years, perhaps, and tell the viewers about how you got to be where you are today.
David, Robert, good afternoon. Thanks for having me on the program. Yeah, look, it's been, as you've said, David, it's been an interesting last 3 years in particular. I might roll back to 2011. I commenced with a new project, a greenfield business unit, with Clubs New South Wales. It was a Club Safe Premium. First time they were offering a level of compliance services internally. It had been previously outsourced to other industry suppliers, and there became a necessity, and it was identified by the management of Clubs New South Wales that the anti-money laundering counter-terrorism financing component of compliance was starting to grow within the industry. We had a new act in 2006. Clubs and pubs having poker machines in general are roped in. There's a significant need to be a little bit more due diligence around 16 machines or more. So, Clubs New South Wales embarked on this journey. I'd previously worked for them in 2007-08 for about 14, 15 months in the workplace relations team. So it was a second stint with them. And, 11, I commenced doing compliance audits around liquor and gaming. And then in 2014, I took over the money laundering portfolio. So, interesting. Roll that forward from 11, 14 to 2000, and probably 2018, things changed a little bit within the organisation, and I started getting very, very vocal end of 18, early 19 about the lack of systems and procedures in place in a lot of these clubs, in particular the larger clubs. And we had an issue with the compliance, raised it with management, and essentially I was chased down the street with a shotgun. So some of the reports I'd conducted on some of the clubs and their systemic failures, also some of the suppliers in the industry providing advice and AML programs to assist clubs, were nothing more than a really expensive roll of sorbent, toilet paper. That's all they were good for. And the industry, and in particular the management, didn't like the reporting, corporate partners and other businesses delivering some of these AML services and products didn't like the direction I was taking. And, you know, I took my role very seriously. In terms of protecting the industry, my role was, reputational risk and regulatory risk, two important components of compliance to make and making the compliance work, taking those two important components in mind. It was impossible to do my job. Years of raising these issues fell on deaf ears, and I was, had enough at the end of the time and pushed out the door, resigned and moved on, as I said, chased down the street, and sort of left me with no choice where to turn to. ASIC, absolute waste of time. Toothless tiger. Not interested in getting involved in this domain. So I went to Andrew Wilkie and unloaded him with a whole heap of internal documents that demonstrated and showed that there was some serious issues within the industry. And we roll forward now to this year, and we've had the New South Wales Crime Commission deliver their report through Operation Islington, which essentially, I believe, has confirmed and substantiated my position of the industry having weak and very low levels of compliance and, rampant in the industry, that some members aren't taking their obligations serious and reporting to AUSTRAC. So, 95 billion dollars going through poker machines identified by the New South Wales Crime Commission, and the systems are so poor and not regulated internally. They couldn't identify what component of that was actually related to money laundering. And then there's also the other issue of problem gambling. So, David, a myriad of issues. And what's the best way to address these when a whistleblower comes out? Bash the whistleblower, chase the whistleblower down the road, make all sorts of stories about the whistleblower, including 23 years ago, the whistleblower was caught sleeping in his underwear. They will do anything to discredit you, as you well know, and cause you financial pain and distress. So, been a very interesting 3 years and been very, very heavily litigated in the federal court.
Now, just for the listeners, you and I have become mates, of course, but I am. One of the things that I thought was interesting about you, and in case anybody's wondering, like myself, in fact, like Jeff Morris and like Peter Fox, like Sharon, you don't come from an activist background. You're not exactly an anti-gambling campaigner. In fact, from what I, you were a candidate for the Liberal Party, I think, for a sort of pre-selection, was that right? State Liberal Party or something back in the day?
No, that's correct. I was tied up with the Liberal Party on the Central Coast. I ran for council as a Liberal councillor on a ticket, and I was tied up for about 7 years with the party. I was a campaign director for a Dobell election, and I was actually the Federal Executive Conference President for Dobell, the State Executive Conference President for Wyong. So I was interested in politics. I wanted to make a difference to the local community, but unfortunately the deeper and the further I stuck my head in, what a debacle the party was and is, and too many self-vested interests. And I think that's what we find in life, in most of our journey and most of our interests and work life, that, you know, it's about individuals and about what they want to achieve and not the greater cause. So very frustrated with that. I just resigned, and there was a little bit of factional warring in the background. I didn't want to be involved in any factional garbage. I just wanted to get on and help the local community and make the local community a better place. So, yeah, I handed my card in to the state director of the Liberal Party, thanked him for his time, and moved on. So, yeah, certainly not an activist. I thought I might have been a realist, but this journey and the federal court issues with Clubs New South Wales, I think I may have underestimated, when you step out and announce yourself as a whistleblower, and as you've said, and the other great company we're in with Peter Fox, Jeff Morris and Sharon, you don't set out on a journey to be a whistleblower and change the world or take up a particular fight. You just end up there normally, don't you?
Yeah. No, there are so many similarities with your story. It makes, as there was with Peter and Jeff and Sharon. But the idea, and it struck a chord with me and struck a chord with the audience, you just took your job seriously. Your job was to, make sure that there was a certain amount of compliance. And I think, like me, and this was when you made your first complaint, well, not even a complaint, when you actually indicated, did your job as to what was going on, there was still something inside of you that was hoping that they might say, yeah, you're right, we need to lift our game. That's what I was hoping anyway. I mean, I knew the realist inside me said it might be remote, but I wasn't such a cynic that I thought it was impossible. After all, you were doing a job, I was doing my job, and you got, as you said, chased down the street with a shotgun, which is pretty much what happened to me, and what happened to Jeff, and et cetera. So it's that's a shock, and I agree. That's I'd have to say I was surprised about what happened to me and the how high up the chain the support. I mean, and you would be surprised the fact that you are now you've got you haven't just lost your house and all your savings and certainly your reputation, or they've tried to damage your reputation. And you're obviously a strong person to handle that, but you've also got a prospect of prison as a result of contempt. And I think that, well, that surprised me. I think it surprised a lot of people, but how it's been turned into a scorched earth battle. Yet, if they had just complied or set out to try to comply. I mean, one of the similarities I can see with you and myself, you obviously didn't get the memo that you weren't actually meant to do your job. You know, I didn't get that memo either. So So, yeah, it's pretty kind of funny. I mean, and I think the good news is I think most people in Australia agree with us that there. I get a lot of, and I got a lot of heart yesterday when I saw a tweet from a sort of Kieran Pender, who's a sort of a lawyer and a campaigner for legal rights, and he said he'd been contacted and saying even though cases like ours, the high-profile cases, are sort of inspiring, the figure was there are hundreds of people in the public service who have been told, like you, you know, if there's anything wrong, please come and tell the management if something's wrong. And when they do, they get chased down the street with a shotgun, just like you said. And the terrible thing about that quote to Kieran Pender was they finished off by saying, "I wished I'd never done it." Now, nothing inspires me more, and I imagine nothing inspires you more, when there are people out there who are likewise told to actually do their job, told to report, told to do compliance, and then they get smashed for it. Now we need to go on for them. Some of them are too scared. You and I are not scared. But so tell us about the latest contempt things. Well, we might be going to a break soon, I think.
I think we've got to go to a break, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to go to a break. Oh, there you go. Here's the doctor.
I'm here, yeah, listening intently.
Okay, let's have a break. You're listening to McBride and Brennan.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
Joe Biden said outright that he's going to do everything he can constitutionally to keep Donald Trump from ever sitting in the big seat again.
I mean, it'd be a continuation of what is Donald Trump has been subjected to since first signaled he was going to run for president, which is they have absolutely gone every way outside of the law, outside of fairness, outside of due process, outside of justice, in order to destroy and otherwise stop Donald Trump in his desire to serve the country and to serve as president and anything he's tried to accomplish, really. To use the term, I guess the popular term, they really jumped the shark. You know, I mean, some of the investigations, that the back and forth that went on between like special prosecutors and so forth. But in this case, they have completely just fabricated out of thin air, you know, masses of fake information. And I mean, it's just, it's crazy. It's like the scandal industrial fabrication complex.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT radio listeners rely on TNT radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. You're listening to McBride and Brennan with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Here I am, David McBride. Robert Brennan is in the background somewhere, and we have...
Yeah, I'm Pokies. Here.
Do you have any questions for Troy, Robert?
Well, I do. I read, Troy, that your job description was formally, literally, the anti-money laundering and counter-terrorism finance manager. So what does it say about an industry that it even has need for such a position? I mean, it's not as if, oh, I'm going to work for McDonald's as the counter-terrorism finance manager. So it implies already that there was a risk within the system that they should have been aware of and been working against.
Absolutely, Robert. Started off well. They actually paid for the course. I did a 2-year course on AML-CTF to abbreviate it, through the International Compliance Association and the Australian Financial Markets Association in Australia. Clubs New South Wales sent me on that. They approved it, paid it. I was the only one during my employment that was qualified with that piece of paper in the club industry. I was one of about 150 in Australia with that qualification. So all the right signs were there, but you know, the deeper I got, and as I found with the responsible gambling component that is being delivered by Clubs New South Wales and the industry as well, it was all window dressing. It looks, you know, on face value that, you know, the organisation is committed to do the right thing, but an industry with so much money being involved, going through the machines, going through the various clubs, you know, one would think there's a lot of money to go around at $95 billion, but the majority of these clubs, and I guess it goes with power, greed, don't want to spend the money simply on putting these programs in place. And you know, I found there was a lot of cutting the corners with that. And, you know, we're not talking about, as you've indicated, working at McDonald's. And no, you know, they do a great job in there at McDonald's. But we're talking about putting systems, measures in place that address put a roadblock in place for organised criminals so they, you know, they can't go into a club and facilitate money laundering through a poker machine, which is, you know, tearing communities apart with the ice epidemic we've got in Australia. And we've got all the data on this, and Clubs New South Wales and the industry is well aware that we're number one, you know, for amphetamine use in the world in recent Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission reports. We've got various data from local government in New South Wales, various data from New South Wales State BOSCAR, Bureau of Statistics and Crime reports that show low socioeconomics with high crime and, you know, high drug use. And they put bloody 600 machines in a club in these areas. It is just absolutely ridiculous. And in my view, it goes all the way to the top. And we've seen the weakness of the Liberal and Labor governments in terms of implementing some sensible gambling reform to protect those that are vulnerable to gambling addiction, to address the money laundering side of things. And the government is just not interested. Clubs New South Wales at the moment is running this state. And you know, another casualty, apart from myself, would be Victor Dominello, the former New South Wales gaming minister, who had his you know, legs chopped off at the knees because he wasn't singing the same tune as the industry, had some really sensible reform and packages to roll out, and the premier said no, we might replace you and send you off into the wilderness somewhere else in the car park down the road, and we'll get a yes man in. And they got Kevin Anderson, the Liberal Nationals MP, and it's been a little bit of smooth sailing for Clubs New South Wales and the industry, you know, around this, and the card still hasn't come in. But thank God we've got some gutsy independents that have stood up, Justin Field, Andrew Wilkie, Alex Greenwich, and the Greens as well, Kate Fuhrman from the Greens. They've been fantastic in jumping on board and saying, we've got a problem here. And the drug issue, we've also got child exploitation, child prostitution, funding of terrorism. I mean, the list goes on and on. The definition of a predicate crime, which is the situation we've got in your local clubs and pubs.
And before my next question here, I've just pulled up some song lyrics from the Whitlams, and I won't sing it because I've got a terrible voice. And I wish I knew the right words to blow up the pokies and drag them away, because they're taking the food off your table so they can say that the trains run on time. Another man there was made the trains run on time. So, that just brought to mind those lyrics. So any examples of, like, the mechanism, how does the money laundering happen, or how does it work, and how do they in quote H marks do it?
Look, it's really simple, and there's a great article today in the Sydney Morning Herald by Harriet Alexander here in New South Wales, and she addresses one particular component. And look, there's many variables to smurfing and different money laundering techniques that these organised criminals can go about. And there's this thought process within the industry that the criminals, you know, aren't going in there and they won't play and lose money because, you know, that's not what you do. But it isn't sophisticated, and within the different types of money launderers, you've got those that are that brazen that'll go in and load up $7,500 into a machine. Currently in New South Wales, we've got old machines that hold $10,000 in one insert into the note acceptor, newer machines $7,500, and then the brand new ones $5,000. So that's the limit now in New South Wales, where other states is significantly lower. But, you know, you've got low-level to mid-level tier of money launderers going in, sticking $7,500 in a machine, which is from their drug sales from the previous day. They get a winning ticket from the club, which they take a photo of to justify where that source of wealth they've now obtained has come from, the origin. It's no longer drug money, or they go to the cash box and get a check for the full amount, or you can get some cash and a check, however you want to structure that. And that basically is rubber stamping that, you know, you have got that from that club, and it'll have winning ticket on top of the check. So if you get pulled over by the police in the car, the proceeds of crime argument that the police would argue before a local magistrate are pretty much out the window, because you've now changed the direction of where the money come from, source of wealth, and it's cleaned. And you think, why would the clubs allow that and not jump on that when there's no financial benefit to the club if it's straight in and straight out? But there's also other money launderers that are playing hard. They're chasing jackpot links. They're actually transacting not to raise suspicion. So if you're playing a machine like the rest of the people in the club, the club has the capabilities, even though they're denying this and they're fighting to have this mandatory cashless card come in. The data is already available through the poker machine programs, internal software programs that they run that monitor what machine, at what time the money went through it. And if the member's not sticking their card in to collect rewards or bump up in the tiering system structure to win a toaster or a microwave or a $100 meal voucher, the club has access to the CCTVs, which are over every machine and can identify who's at that machine at that time. So the technology is there. That is a complete lie and misrepresentation from the industry that a card can't come in, which would significantly help address this money laundering issue. At the end of the day, the resistance is 20 or 30%. The Crime Commission has identified in Operation Islington as a rough estimate of what's actually being laundered. 20% or 30% of $95 billion is a lot of money. They don't want to miss out on that money going through their venues, through the industry, and that supports the new group of emerging CEOs on $1 million plus per year to run a club, which is absolutely insane. One CEO reported $1.5 million a year, and, you know, he's just the face of the club. He's got a team of managers beneath him to run the daily activities. So, you know, a puppet for the board more so. So, you know, there's many systems in it.
That's not such a big club, the tiering systems,
as I touched on, they've got the data, they know what's going on, but it's easy to turn a blind eye when there's so much money involved.
Yes, and when $95 billion going just through the pokies, I hear tell that Crown Casino, their group, had this gargantuan fine because they're involved in money laundering out of China. But they can wear it if they're getting the if their bottom line exceeds that. So, yeah, wow.
And look, same with the clubs. I mean, one club, DYRSL, was fined by ILGA, the authority in New South Wales, the Independent Liquor and Gaming Authority. They were fined, I think it was $200,000 relating to the suicide of a customer, Gary Van Junen, a high roller within the club. It is on public record. I mean, they go down the servo and buy his smokes and, you know, take him on harbour cruises and bring his mates along to grog up and put on lavish functions, etc. They know exactly what they're doing. Red carpet entries in the car parks. And, you know, we've got a regulator in liquor and gaming in New South Wales that have got very good dedicated inspectors and investigators that want to do the right thing, but this is way above their pay grade, and you've got the government, state government stepping in, Liberal and Labor, and interfering in, you know, in these people trying to do their jobs and make sure, you know, there is some sort of compliance and stability within the industry. But you know, the politicians are being bought with political donations. That just goes round and round in a circle. And, you know, recently 8 senior inspectors from Liquor and Gaming, and I've had the pleasure to meet quite a lot of them over the years I've been in the industry. They just want to do their job and they're facing the same problem. So to lose 8 investigators and compliance specialists within a tiny window frame a few months ago, you know, surely that's got to indicate to the, you know, the normal person that there's a problem with the industry. And in my view, it doesn't pass the pub test. Neither does it when the Crime Commission set up an inquiry, they have recommendations, and the Liberal government is reluctant and slow off the mark to implement the cashless card, gambling card, which is one of the top one out of the 8 recommendations. The executive summary of the Crime Commission reports deals with these issues. And then you've got the Labor New South Wales government in opposition, believing they're a lay-down mazare for the March election to get in. They won't even enter into the debate. Because they got their heads in the trough with the industry as well. I mean, the only one with clean hands are the Greens and the Independents. So it is a massive, massive battle. And to silence me is what they've tried over the last 3 years, including what David was mentioning a little bit earlier about these contempt proceedings in the federal court. I've had suppression issues against myself and Friendly Geordies to shut us down. We're talking about a private organisation. It's not military. It's not ASIO. It's not ASIS. It's not the government. Yet they've got more power than these agencies I've just mentioned. It is really, really scary. And now I'm facing jail time with Jordan Shanks for an interview that we conducted while I was receiving radiation in Newcastle. And whatever they can do to grind me down health-wise, mental-wise, financially, I'm in the hole for well over, you know, $1 million now. With all these proceedings, I've been down every wombat and rabbit warren in the country. They've taken me down those legal holes. And, you know, I put the stress of this, and David can attest to the stress. I put it down to my May this year diagnosis of stage 4 esophageal and bone cancer, which is terminal. Yeah. So, you know, it is that's the levels they will go to destroy you. And at the moment, I'm extremely lucky. The chemotherapy is working, and I'm battling on, and I want to see this through the end. I want to be present in all the court proceedings, and you know, that's my aim now, not to give in, to finish what I've started.
Good on you.
I love that, Troy. I absolutely love that about you. And I think, like the others we've talked in the last weeks, I just, with all these difficulties we've both had, I'm so proud that it's brought me to know you. And I love the way that you, I think that's the most fantastic Aussie archetype when you say, I may be dying, but I'm gonna finish the job. Love that. And I hope we get to share a prison cell together, as we joked. If that's the case, I'll be happy to be like the end of Casablanca. We'll be walking off together in the desert. But, yeah, the idea that you're facing it with your head held high, I think is terrific. We've got another ad break, I think, coming up. And but I want to hear about the MOUs between the politicians and Clubs New South Wales. And we'll hear about that when we come back after the break.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
If you've been listening here on TNT over the past couple of months, we've been warning you about the threat of an early winter. In fact, it's raining a lot in the UK, and I've always noticed that heavy rains during the month of November usually mean December is going to be very, very cold. That in turn correlates with what we were talking about at the end of the summer, about how it looked to me like the big three, the Far East, the US, and Europe, were going to get very, very cold. Now, I got to give Joe Biden credit for one thing. He's made weather great again. Back in the heyday of weather in 2005, 2006, where prices were up real high because of hurricanes, well, people needed weather forecasts. Well, they need them now because prices are real, real high. And there is no excuse for this. There is no excuse for what has happened here. It is a phony climate war with insane energy policies. And guess what? Some of the stuff we were talking about, how cold it was going to get, that's where my value is. It looks like it's going to be happening over the next few weeks. This is meteorologist Joe Bastardi, TNT's climate and weather watchdog, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Do citizens make decisions based on evidence and reason? Or are they manipulated by behavioral economists applying nudge theory? In 1992, the Rockefeller-controlled Russell Sage Foundation launched the Behavioral Economics Roundtable. In 2008, two members of the roundtable, Cass Sustain and Richard Thaler, co-authored the book Nudge, which led to widespread government adoption of nudge theory through the Behavioral Insights Team. Also known as the Nudge Unit, launched in the United Kingdom, the Behavioral Insights Team now has offices worldwide, including in Canada, Latin America, the United States, Australia, New Zealand, and Singapore. The Nudge Unit boasts to have trained 20,000 civil servants and practitioners in behavioral insights. Supported by taxpayer funding, subtle messaging techniques nudge populations to normalize behaviors and attitudes deemed appropriate by nameless, faceless bureaucrats. The Nudge Unit plays on people's fears and guilt. It promises rewards for compliance in its projects, such as boosting vaccination rates and reducing energy consumption.
You're with David McBride and Dr. Robert Brennan on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. It's David McBride here with Robert Brennan, and we're here with Troy Stoltz. It's very good to have listeners here today. And like a lot of the times when you have cases like yours, Troy, and mine, and even when I was fascinated during the Ben Robert Smith defamation trial earlier this year, it's sometimes it's the peripheral facts that come out tangential. Now, one of the things that has come out in your case, which I was quite shocked about, and the more I think about it, the more shocked I am, that before the state elections in New South Wales, the gambling capital of Australia, both Liberal and Labor parties sign a memorandum of understanding, which is a legal, like a contract, with the gambling lobby, promising the gambling lobby that they won't do anything, basically, that's going to upset the gambling lobby. And that, to me, is just quite extraordinary. And the idea that the industry lobby makes the politicians kind of come in and, on bended knee and swear that they will do everything they possibly can. It's like it's a dystopian world where the politicians, in order to get elected, have to beg industries with a sort of very questionable history and promise that they won't do anything to offend those industries. I mean, that to me, and again, they're looking like they're getting ready to do it for the next New South Wales election in 4 months' time. What do you feel about those MOUs? It's hard to believe they're actually real.
David, it is unbelievable. I call it the bridal waltz. The politicians come in and do, you know, the foxtrot and the nice bridal waltz with the executive management and board team of Clubs New South Wales, very cosy in the boardroom, and they get trot the document out and say, you know, we'll look after you guys should we get in. And the politicians are scared beyond belief. They are terrified of Clubs New South Wales and the industry. And there's this embedded in the politicians' mind that if they don't woe and appease the gambling industry, that they'll be decimated at the next election, and they'll have even idle threats of, we'll have every individual employee working at a club in New South Wales hand out against your party, and if you don't play the game and sign the MOU, which is completely garbage. You've got, might be the CEOs handing out propaganda to, intimidate politicians at the polling booths because they're on $1.5 million salaries. But the average gaming attendant and staff member at a club are on $26-$27 bucks an hour. They're hardly going to give their weekends up and get involved in, a campaign against a political party. So I think the politicians need to wake up. They've got more than one constituent, being Clubs New South Wales. They've got a commitment to us that are voting them in. They've got a commitment to the community. And when we've got a community filled with ICE issues and organised criminals cleaning their money at your local club, we've got a massive problem. And, even the rhetoric of the industry turning around the Crime Commission report and saying there's nothing to see here and, I think there was some rhetoric around, well, Coles and Woolworths should be subject to anti-money laundering legislation because the criminals are going in there and cleaning their money, buying groceries. They will twist and turn and play the victim, at every point they get. My view is, there are people that want to play. There's casual players. There's three types of players in New South Wales. Casual players. There is money launderers and those with gambling addiction. And, we keep some of the machines. We've got far too many machines. I don't believe all the machines should go. We keep some, but we need to regulate this industry. The inspectors from Liquor and Gaming and ILGA need to be able to go in and do their job and make sure the clubs are complying with the legislation. And the government needs to harden up. We need money in New South Wales for hospitals, for mental health. Why don't we tax them appropriately? Signing these MOUs, giving them a free kick with tax, telling them we won't hold them accountable during our term of government is something, you know, archaic out of the dark ages. We need to really, you know, address that and move forward. And I don't think we can do that in New South Wales until we fill the parliament with Teals and Greens, because Liberal and Labor are beholden to the industry and they have been for 4 or 5 decades. We're not going to see that change. And there's been a massive amount of media around the money laundering issues and the alliance and Tim Costello around the damage that, you know, the gambling addiction's doing to our social fabric, our communities, yet the politicians are willing to turn a blind eye from Liberal and Labor and allow it to continue. So MOUs, in my view, should be in the bin. They are about equivalent to the brown paper bags and the envelopes we used to deal with a long time ago. These days, I mean, the corruption is so blatant, it's frightening, really.
Yeah, no, and it sums up how pathetic and hypocritical they are. When you've got Chris Minns, who the man who would be premier, and he's up there going, oh, well, the Liberals are corrupt and, you know, vote for me and a new voice. And then if you asked him, are you going to sign an MOU with Clubs New South Wales? He'd go, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that. And it's like, well, what sort of alternative premier are you when you're actually taking money from an organisation who are involved with problem gambling, who are involved with taking money off the most vulnerable people, money that you could easily, if you had any kind of backbone, Chris Minns, you would, and if you were really for improving the lives of the people of New South Wales, you wouldn't be sacrificing your credibility for the sake of a donation from a particular group.
So, exactly. If I could just make a gratuitous pitch for the station, you know, listen to this, crikey.com. We have on a guest which is making an unsolicited acknowledgement of the good that's in the Greens and the Teals, and we're defending the actions of one Geordie, friendly Geordies, Jordan Shanks McGovernor. So we're not far right. We're interested in truth here at TNT. And not only did they have these memorandums of understanding, but the action that they took against you and friendly Geordies, that was done ex parte, no due process. You weren't even allowed in the courtroom or your representing lawyers. Sneaky buggers.
Spot on, Robert. We didn't even know it was happening, friendly Geordies and myself. And you know, slipping from a civil jurisdiction where I'm being sued for breach of confidence and essentially, you know, giving some documents to journalists, to politician like Andrew Wilkie, and then ending up doing an interview with friendly Geordies and having that portion move from civil proceedings into criminal proceedings where Clubs New South Wales are the prosecutor. There's no DPP or Attorney General. They have the power, and the hole in that piece of legislation is absolutely extraordinary. Of course they want to prosecute me. They want to shut me up. They don't want more documents or more information coming out that exposes them for, you know, what they are running. And look, to the credit, there are some decent CEOs and decent board members. Not everyone is tainted with the same brush in the club industry, but their voices are drowned out by the likes of Clubs New South Wales and those with vested interests in, you know, in looking after themselves. And if I could say the work that Friendly Geordies has done, you know, reporting on everything that's a bit controversial and hot, and end up having his house torched, you know, absolute disgrace. And this is where we need these politicians of all political persuasions to step up and protect the freedom of speech. And in terms of us whistleblowers, I've been deemed not to be a whistleblower by clubs in New South Wales. And I'm sick of the politicians, including Albanese and Mark Dreyfus, fluffing around with the content of whistleblower legislation because you haven't gone to ASIC and waited 6 months before you reported. That is all absolute garbage. If there's a crime being committed or there's a breach of legislation, it should be dealt with far quicker than that, and making us jump through the hoops, making us wear, you know, $1 million legal fee costs and losing our houses for reporting on something. I mean, it seems to me that Albanese, Dreyfus are no different to the other politicians that are just talking, not walking the walk. We're still exposed. And they're fluffing around with legislation. I mean, let's cut the legislation and the narrative down. If a corporation or an individual's done the wrong thing, let's throw the bloody book at them, not throw the book at the whistleblowers. I'm, you know, that just makes me so angry.
Yeah, that's right. That's the joke, isn't it? And Mark Dreyfus, he loves whistleblowers. The problem is, I'm not a whistleblower. You're not a whistleblower. Boyle's not a whistleblower. We're all criminals. he hasn't yet found a proper whistleblower. They don't exist. If you don't like the government, you're not a whistleblower. You're a criminal. But he does like whistleblowers. You know,
he might need to amend the legislation. I mean, it's just a joke. The hoops we have to go through for reporting matters of public interest, and I believe not only is what I've blown the whistle on in the gambling industry public, a matter of public interest, it's a bloody matter of national security with the way the criminal network works across the world in terms of the drug trafficking, etc. We're getting massive numbers of police arrests and operations in New South Wales reaping the rewards of taking drugs off the street, yet clubs in New South Wales are happy to let the criminals go in and enable them to clean their money at the club and don't see a problem with it. This is outrageous.
Yeah, I know. And you're the problem. You know, you're the one going to jail. You're the one who has to spend his life savings and, you know, fight till the very last, you know, when it's pretty clear that you're not the problem. But as you have found out, I've found out that the problem is deep. The problem is deep, and the systems are such that you can be put on the back foot. You can be, to add insult to injury, not only are you, as you said, chasing them, and being pursued by clubs masquerading as the police, but they've got both sides, because Friendly Geordie's had his house firebombed, and so on the other side of the law as well. It's pretty scary, and you would have thought that the government, someone in government, someone in the police would be saying, this is wrong, this is way out of order. But there's a you know, there's crickets, as you said, there's crickets about it. No one is saying, hang on, what are we doing here? We've got these questionable elements running prosecutions, and there seems to be some, you know, very dangerous activity going on. Who knows when they're going to firebomb me next? But it's, at what point do people say Australia is getting out of control with its, with things that are going on? And you're right, this go slow of the federal government talk about whistleblower protection, but you and me are going to be dead before anything actually happens. And it's pretty, Mark Dreyfus is the lifesaver on the beach and someone's drowning and he's making this very nice plan to save them, but they're going to be dead before they, that's if he's even genuine. Oh, but it's so good to have you on. Robert, any last questions or points?
No, just the observation that these bastards are even willing, Clubs New South Wales are willing to go after your estate and punish your wife if you pass away from cancer. I don't mean to be indelicate, but that's what we're dealing with.
100%, but they will, they will continue a portion of the claim against my wife. And the funny thing is, you know, how they fund this, they're masquerading around as a not-for-profit, peak industrial body looking after a group of clubs when they own 50% of Keno and New South Wales reap the rewards of $17 million a year from that business unit, pay no tax, not for profit, and under the Troy, the former Nationals.
We'll have to
Troy
keep
Green
up with your
We're going to cut you off, Troy, but thank you so much for coming on.
Crash into the ads, but as always,
you're an absolute legend. We love you. And this is it for McBrien and Brennan this week. Thank you for listening.